The White Network presents The Heretic's Hour with Carolyn Yeager.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the September 10th, 2012 edition of The Heretic's Hour, coming live from the White Network. I am Carolyn Yeager, your host for the next 2 hours. I want to take this opportunity to advise the visitors to my website. I've been meaning to say this for several programs now and didn't get it in. Visitors to my website, carolynyeager.com, that there are still some things that need fixing there. For instance, going to all the pages holding the archived Heretics Hour programs. And since there are well over 100 programs now, well over that many, it takes quite a few pages, but they don't seem to work. It'll be as much as probably 2 more weeks before this can be fixed. But all the older Heretics Hour programs are available again at Voice of Reason at reasonradionetwork.com. Just click on programs and then older programs under the programs on the menu. And if you want to search for one, you can do it there for the time being anyway. And this availability of the archives at Voice of Reason, again, is thanks to Dietrich Mullis, who I am pleased to say is my guest tonight, along with Mark Novosel. So hello and welcome to both of you.
Hi, Carolyn. Thanks for having us on.
Okay. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
I've never called you Mark. I've always called you Mishko, and I only talked to you a couple of times back when on the phone quite a few years back, maybe, almost.
Most people call it other things.
Yeah, well, but do you like being called, Mark?
It makes no difference. I mean, most people know me as Mishko, so, I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's kind of your radio name, I guess, although...
Well, my friends call me Mishko.
Okay, well, I will call you Country. Mishko then, so people know who I'm talking to. Well, so we're here because my Saturday afternoon program with Dietrich kind of got botched up, and he was willing to come back on tonight, and the guest that I had scheduled didn't want to come on tonight, although I have rescheduled him for Saturday, so it all worked out quite well, really, and so we managed to get you both here, and here we are, so I'm very happy to have both of you, and I guess I'll just start out that saying that we wanted to discuss on Saturday what was the future for VOR, if Dietrich had any plans of hanging around there and getting it going again. And since then, he has indicated on the website there at the top that he is committed now to a twice a month radio broadcast. And I'd like to hear, I'm sure the listeners would like to hear more about that, Dietrich.
Thanks, Carolyn. Yeah, I have committed to doing a bi-monthly thing. This was due to a bit of chiding and a bit of, chiding on all sides of the issue. And some old friends came forward and they really got me to see the bigger picture, and so I did go ahead and make a commitment to do a bi-weekly show, and I appreciate you going ahead and asking that right off the top. I did post that at the VORnetwork.com. I'm going to be sort of taking the reins 100% back, and I'm going to be doing shows, and I'm going to go ahead and rename that back to Whitelandia as I originally wanted to do.
Oh. That was one of my questions. I was going to say, don't you think, would you consider changing the name?
But sure. I mean, that, Radio Free Whitelandia, I think.
Great name.
To use an overworked phrase, I think it's an idea whose time has come. With that said, I'd like to, if I could, go ahead and answer just a small handful. I posted last night just sort of a rambling thing to the blog saying, should I do this? Email me if you think I should do this. And I have a couple. I'd like to go ahead if I could, you know, because typing and stuff takes so much time.
Sure.
If I could take a couple minutes to, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback, which I'd like to respond to, if you don't mind.
No, I don't.
Okay, all right. So I'll just take about one out of every 10 or 15. And I just want to go ahead off the top and say thank you. The feedback has been really great, and it's convinced me to go ahead and kickstart this thing and get back started. So to answer your questions or to respond to your comments, thank you. That's so nice of you to say. No, thank you. I'm happily married. You're too kind. Thanks for listening. No, actually, we're just good friends. No, I don't talk with Peter Schenck anymore. It would be just me and the occasional guest, maybe Mark Mishko Novosel. No, actually, we're just good friends. 9 pounds, 16 ounces, 21 inches. Thank you, but I'm the guy who did Friday nights a few years ago that did the rants. And no, actually, we're just good friends. And so that answers the first few responses that I got. But thanks for the responses. We'll be linking to you, Carolyn, and hope we can get a link back. And so we'll be doing, you know, every other week we'll be doing a show. So thanks for the chiding, thanks for the guilt trips, and thanks for the trips down memory lane to the people who supported VOR in the past when I was involved with it. I'll be getting re-involved with it, and I'll be, I guess, the driving force behind it. So I'll be doing shows there, so you can check VOR.network.com or Whitelandia.com. If I can get that domain back, I think I might be able to, since I still own it, as well as the White Network. Thank you.
Oh, great. Great. All right. Well, that answers some questions. So, you know, obviously, Dietrich, you always held the server contracts in your name, if that's what you call them. I mean, that always was in your name. You never gave that up, right?
That's pretty much correct. Yeah, I never, I shared the keys to the kingdom, but I didn't altogether give them up. So I retained that last bastion of control over things. Yeah.
Okay, so now you have it in control, and I'm really glad to hear this, because I didn't like what happened when VOR went down, and then the next thing we heard. Now here I'm going to come up with somebody's name. We heard Greg Johnson saying, take over, kind of. He didn't say take over, but we're going to try to get all these archives and put them on Countercurrents, and we're going to bring hosts over here, and we're going to make the Countercurrents radio. And well, I thought it was a little bit early for him to do that, and it did turn out to be. So I'm very gratified.
Well, you know, Ms. Cal, I think that's not an altogether ignoble pursuit. Since what I've described as being a continuation is not exactly a continuation, you know, I say I'm going to be doing a bi-monthly show. So you have all these hosts out there generating this content, and they still need a home. For crying out loud, I am not going to be dealing with the personalities and the software that the personalities that need to be coddled and the software that needs to be coded to run any type of network of this type. And I'm not setting that comment against anyone. I'm just saying, anytime you have a number of people and you have an ideology, you have to play and you're playing the role of program manager. It's a lot. And I have a feeling you're about to find this out, bringing more people on. But you find out that there's a lot more than meets the eye. You know, it really is like the tip of the iceberg is what you see, and everything all the undercurrents and everything under the waterline is the hard stuff. And if Johnson wants to take that type of responsibility on and he wants to deal with that, I say I support him 100,000%. At least technically, I want, you know, if he wants to, these things are not copyright. I am willing to let these archives go to the winds. Once VOR sort of figured out that some people might have a problem with this, we made it very clear in our quote unquote contracts with new hosts that this stuff was free and that we would let it be as such. So anyone who wanted to rehost, anyone who wanted to, you know, the the main thing was getting this into as many people's ears as possible. So I don't care if someone else wants to start a new website and say, hey, we are whatever network and we have these great new shows, and they want to claim complete credit for what VOR was doing at the time. I have absolutely no problem with that. It's the tip of the spear. It's the product that matters. And as long as the content, the product is good and is ideologically sound, then I believe it deserves getting out there. It deserves getting on people's iPods and on people's car stereos and people's earbuds. I don't care who gets the credit for it. And I think a lot of people are like that. So, you know, Mr. Johnson or whomever wants to sort of, you know, take up this burden, I welcome them, and if I can help them, and this is to you, Mr. Johnson, if you want to contact me, if you think, or anyone else, if you're serious about doing this type of thing, if you want to contact me, you'll figure out how to do it. You will figure out how to do it. You know, I don't, VRnetwork.com. You'll find my contact information, and if I will do what I can do to sort of leapfrog you above all of the step 1, 2, and 3 that we had to do to build this media thing. You know, if I can help in any way, and if I have the time to
Johnson
do it.
Johnson has said that he just wants to do podcasting. He doesn't want to do broadcasting. And also he said after he made some of those early statements, but then he kind of qualified and said, well, some of the hosts he would bring on. And then after you brought the website back up, and the archives were available, then he said, well, you know, he's already working with Robert Stark and, Tom Sunick. And, right. Who knows, he might work with Weber, Mark Weber, because there, all those were recorded programs.
Well,
anyway.
The thing is that these people now know how to do this stuff. And if they want to do it, and it's a known entity, if they want to broadcast and create media, they can. And there are a set of protocols that are out there. And I believe that I believe VOR stacks up against anyone in the business. We have the best protocols for hosts, at least when I set them up for doing things. We had ways of achieving ends. And that's very important with media, and ways that people just downloading the podcast have the convenience of not really having to understand. The fact is, to get good audio, you have to do a lot more than meets the eye to get that good audio. And then you have the content and all this stuff on top of it. But for VOR, we really said, okay, well, the internet promises that we can be as good as CNN. Let's see how far that goes. Let's stretch it out. Let's try to get good content. Because while a lot of this stuff is preaching to the choir, and a lot of the comments and the naysayers or the yaysayers or whatever, they'll say, you know, good job, bad job, what have you. The fact is, if you have good quality and you have a good quality in audio and presentation, that goes a long way towards saying, okay, well, we can hit it from this angle or that angle. We can hit it from, you know, this historical precedent is bad, or everything you know is wrong, or, hey, here's something funny that makes fun of all the stuff you see on TV that you may or may not know that you're disgusted with, or, hey, here's why you don't identify with Obama or Romney. These are things that, you know, we forget these things, but these are things that to the uninitiated are important. And they're important to me in reaching out to the uninitiated. And while at the same time trying to remain ideologically in line enough to generate enough funds from the initiated, saying, hey, did you, you know, attaboy, let's, I think you've got the right thing in mind. Let's, you know, you're doing the right thing. You're trying to, at the same time, generate enough heat from people. You're trying to preach to the choir just enough to keep them supporting you, to keep them realizing that what you're doing is the right thing. My whole thing is that we weren't trying to preach to the choir. That's a circle jerk. We're trying to preach to the uninitiated. I want the societal elites. I want the cultural elites of any new generation to be able to get 5 minutes with the type of content from VOR, or the type of content that I myself was able to create, and say, you know, that's worth thinking about, or man, this really bothers me and this is going to keep me up at night, you know, because that's how I was initiated. Something that certain people said kept me up at night. I couldn't sleep through it. I was a political science and philosophy and history kid, and I couldn't sleep at night past all this stuff, all this cognitive dissonance that was being put in my head. And it finally broke through and I woke up. And I would say that one elite in society, I guess I'm sort of a, like an elitist thinker in that way. You know, I believe that societal and cultural elites are worth 100, proles, you know, 100 ditch diggers or whatever. And I come from a long line of farmers and ditch diggers, so I'm not exactly putting them down. I'm just saying, you know, I want 5 minutes with the movers and shakers.
Well, how are you gonna, you think you're gonna get, let me ask you this. You, were you happy with the lineup, with the work, with what VOR ended up with, say, in the last in the last few months, 2012?
No idea what was.
Did you think that was good?
12 or 2011, or for the most part, 2010, as far as I can recall. I had no idea what was on VOR at that point. My thing was to hire good people and to let them do good things. Now, at some point, I believe that that got a little bit out of control, but at the same time, I don't think anything particularly bad came out of VOR. I don't think anything, you know, bad things come out of CNN, bad things come out of Fox News. I don't think anything bad came out of VOR. And until someone shows me different, I would be willing to bet that I'd be willing to put out there that I don't think anything bad per se came out of VOR. Maybe
Well, no, I'm not saying bad. I'm saying, but was it in line with what you, it sounds like it was maybe in line with what you're saying you want to do, that it's always been, that's always been, you know, VOR, one thing I was going to ask you about, VOR never put up a mission statement. I brought that up to Mike, a couple of times, and he said, yeah, we need that. He said, I just haven't gotten around to it. Well, that, you know, even from the beginning. So now, you know, I felt that he didn't want to write one because he didn't want to pin himself down and, right, and didn't want to say, well, we're a big tent organization here.
Carolyn, I would say I don't think Mike is wrong. I think a mission statement makes an organization more rigid. I think we should be more tolerant or diverse or whatever the heck, you know, meme you want to use. I think we should be able to allow on hosts that are just complete barn burners, desk pounders, whatever. And at the same time, bring on hosts are a little more, okay, well, let's look at the historical side of this. And hosts, you know, I believe that hosts should be able to disagree. We should, you know, I don't think the network has to make one statement. I think that's a little, I just think it's inflexible, and I think the only thing that we should not digress on, the only thing that we should all believe in lockstep and that we cannot digress on is the 14 words. And the 14 words have been written, they've been set in stone, and we're good with that. It doesn't need to be written again.
That's pretty restrictive in a sense, you know. And so what does Whitelandia mean to you then? You know, what is that going to mean, Whitelandia?
Well, it doesn't mean anything new, that's for sure. I mean, you know, back in World War One, the President of the United States, after the close of World War One, the President of the United States was welcomed in Europe with ticker tape parades or whatever, you know, with just huge lambast and huge parades. And, you know, he had 14 points, and one of the main causal elements of his 14 points was that every people should have their own land carved out for them. This is really simple stuff. You know, this is why I don't think we need a mission. The one chance, and here's a little bit of news for you, Carolyn, here's something that's never been let out in the wild. The one time we did attempt a mission statement, the ERSAT's program director, Peter Schenck, tried to interject a bunch of New Testament stuff into it. And I hadn't been around for about 9 months or 10 months at the time. And this was the one time I came back in and I said, no, we're not going to do this. So I really came back in and said, no, this is rabbinical text and we're not going to do it. Whether we have to, you know, if we have to forego a mission statement in general, I just don't think we need a mission statement until it's shown to me, demonstrated to me that we need a mission statement. I just didn't think VOR did, and it was never really demonstrated to me that we did. I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it, our mission statement was don't suck, have good high audio quality, be more or less philosophically grounded, and be interesting. And the moment you stop doing that or getting along or like causing a problem with the network or other people, you were out of there. And as long as you sort of, you know, were able to do your show, we would promote you. We would pay for the servers. We would do all this other stuff. I think that was a pretty damn good deal.
Hey, can I chime in?
Yeah,
for a second,
Mishko,
there?
Please do. And tell us if you're in with this. I mean, are you going to be part of this with Dietrich?
Dietrich has yet to ask me, so, I mean, I just found out about, tonight's show about 2 hours ago right now, and was able to make it on here. But to kind of add to what, Dietrich's saying, you gotta understand the way VOR came about. I mean, realistically, we were on another network, so to speak, and we were looking at our numbers and saying,
give credit, that was VNN Forum run by Alex Linder.
Yeah, okay, all right. We were on VNN Forum, run by Alex Linder, and we were looking at the numbers because we could see how many people are listening and stuff like that. We could also see the downloads. And the numbers were just not there because we were just simply preaching to the choir. And I said, to Dietrich one day, I go, man, we got to do something better. We got to get this message out there. You know, and really create something that people can understand, respect, not get too offended by it, and say, wow, I never heard this before. And that's really how Dietrich and I probably spent several hours one night just talking about it and kind of making our own demands. You know,
long version is that Mark made a lot of demands on me, and then I said no, and then he got really mad at me, and then things went back and forth for about 10 days, and then I finally acquiesced, and the rest
Carolyn, when I want something bad enough, this is why I'm good in sales. I will annoy the living hell out of you. And I did that to Dietrich, and God bless him. I mean, I put him in the hospital for it. Not physically. I mean, not.
That's true. No, physically he did.
Yeah, physically did, but not like, I physically assaulted him, but, dude, he worked so hard. He ended up in the hospital. See, what was that?
Jewed me into the hospital.
Oh God. So, you know, but the whole intent was, realistically, Carolyn, it was to get, like Dietrich says, good quality, and a good message. That's really what the key is. So when we start having conversations about, like, the content that's on VOR, I mean, that's everybody to have. Yeah, it might be on Dietrich's server and stuff like that, but realistically speaking, the more people listen to it, the better. I mean, that's the intent. I mean, we didn't do this for any self gains at all.
No.
I mean,
how do you feel now about it, what do you have to say about it? You guys created it, and then you both ended up gone. You were there longer, Mishko, but you finally left too, and it kept going. Now, what do you think at this point? Well, I guess I should also say, it sounds like, are you just going to, are you clearing everything off? You're just starting with your show, Dietrich, and you're not trying to bring people back in. You're not trying to continue the stable of hosts that it ended up with.
Well, right now that's could accurately describe it. After the show, during the show even, I might have an email sitting right now in my email box of a tech guy, of which I know about a dozen or two, who might say, hey, I want to take VOR to the next level. I want to do this, that, and the other, and it might be on it. So it's very much in flux right now, and it doesn't really have a set path right now. The minimum is that I will be doing shows bi-weekly, and I'm going to do the best damn job that I can do.
What, you're going to be doing live shows, live calling shows, I imagine.
No.
And that was, oh, because that was a problem, supposedly, the last I knew, that when the server, when they bought a new server, or the server, old server crashed, bought a new server, upgraded, the software didn't quite work right, although Mike could do recorded shows, but he couldn't do live shows.
Carolyn, let's be straight about things.
Yeah, let's
do it. Let's be straight about things. Mike did not buy a new server. The server is hosted on another company's website. That server on that company's site crashed. It is their obligation to provide you with another server because it was just not VOR that's there. There's other companies that are sitting on that server. We were probably on a virtual machine sitting on their server. So the upload that he did not go well, you know, and that's part of the techie stuff. And to kind of and to take a step back to understand what Dietrich really created was something that wasn't really ultimately used the way it should have been used, is if you had a Skype account, the system would call you when your show was ready to go. You didn't have to do anything. The audio would start. I mean, you'd get called. The audio would start for whatever program you had. Do your thing. You could, through Skype and all this, you could bring people in and off you went. It would archive it automatically and then set it in the queue to be rebroadcasted. The problem is that and I really don't want to throw Mike underneath the bus, but Mike's kind of a perfectionist, is that he wanted to review all the audio. He wanted to go over it. If there was a blip in it, he wanted to re-edit it and this and that. And that's where you create all this work. Doing this, I mean, Dietrich has a job. He has his own company. He has several of his own companies. I have a full-time job. I mean, I leave at 6:30 in the morning. I generally come home at 6:30 at night, you know. So we have real lives. I mean, we don't do this for a living. So it becomes a tedious task. And you start adding in, you know, trying to control the environment, you know, or to help out the guests and this and that, it becomes a full-time job, and that's burnout. I mean, and that's really what you saw at VOR. It was not for a lack of it not producing great shows. I thought all the shows were really, really good. I personally thought that the Friday show was the best because I was on it, but, you know, I have no bias. But, you know, it's all about the content and making it as simple as possible. And that's truly what we had there.
Exactly. And so I like to say what's what, whoever gets, end up under the bus, seemingly under the bus, but, people want to say now that Mike worked so hard. And I was just aware that Mike, eventually I was aware that Mike created this work for himself. And he wanted to do it that way. And now you're telling me even further that it wasn't designed that way, but he kind of turned it that way.
But God bless him. I mean, he really wanted it to be the best it possibly could be. And sometimes during a live show, especially the way we have it, we're not in a studio, you know.
Yeah.
We've got a server somewhere else running all this. And I mean, sometimes there's a hiccup there, here or there, or you know what I mean? Or you drop, like the last show I did was with the interview with the Mark Cornet from South Africa. And we were calling him on his cell phone, which I actually was paying for the call for, right? And he dropped off, and it wasn't a big deal. We got him back in like 2 minutes or something, but Mike wanted to edit that out to be perfect. So no fault to Mike. I mean, Mike was a perfectionist, but that created more work for him, I believe.
It created too much work for him. That was not sensible. And that's why I wanted to go live. You know, I got that, that show at RBN, and everything there is live. And I the first time I did it live, and I went to 5 days, 5 days a week, 1 hour a day live. And I found that very unstressful. I found that very relaxing. It didn't bother me. I got more stressed out over my 1 hour at Voice of Reason getting recorded and getting it all perfected and everything. And I was all for the perfection, but it was just kind of a hassle. And so after that, I told Mike I would stay at VOR, but I wanted to go live. He was shocked. You want to go live? Are you sure? You know, as he thought I wanted to make sure everything was just so. And
Kellen,
I said, yes, I do, because it's a whole lot easier to just get on there and do it. And you can't really change anything. It just, I got used to that. You know, once I got used to it, too bad if you can't.
Well, it's very hard, or it's very, you know, I don't think it's very good to sit here. And I think where we are right now is good, but I wouldn't want to go any, you know, I'd be remiss to sit here and second guess Matt Connor. You know, I think it's all Monday morning quarterbacking. You know, say he could have been less of a perfectionist or whatever. That guy put in so many hours for VOR. That guy put in so many, like, activist type hours of work. And I know what he does for a living. And believe me, that guy can make $150 an hour. Easy. And the fact that he gave so many hours to VOR for $0,
agreed.
Tells, you know, agreed, right? Okay, so, you know, we would be remiss to sit here. Mishko and I would be remiss to sit here and second guess him to any great extent.
We're not doing that. We're just saying that that doesn't work too well. And you're saying you're not going to
do
that.
It doesn't. And well, and it's easy for me to sit here and say I'm not going to do that because it's only going to be me. I'm going to record a show. I'm going to put it up on MP3. I'm going to post it on the blog. It's going to take 5 seconds beyond the time that I use to create the content. The problem is that when you and this is something that I'm afraid got cut out of our short talk on Saturday, Carolyn, is that I think anyone doing this type of thing, you know, shouldn't set themselves up even inadvertently, especially inadvertently, to be a Fuhrer on a molehill. We should always be looking at people with talent to bring them up with us so that in case of burnout, there is an infrastructure. So that in case of, my God, look at Pierce, cancer. I mean, look what happened. Pierce passed away from a medical malady, and look what happened. I mean, we're still dealing. Look at how many years later are we dealing with the fallout of him passing away, of the strong type of one-man leadership. If anything, that's what he did wrong, and I believe he recognized it, but he may have recognized it too late, or that the movement was not able to generate enough good, solid men to deal with the fallout.
I don't think that line of reasoning goes too far, but you did bring that up. You did mention a sphere on a molehill.
Go ahead and tell me. Go ahead and tell me.
Well, because strong leaders are strong leaders, and there's not a bunch of them, and you're not gonna have a little group of them to draw from when something happens to one. They're not gonna be the same. There's only one William Pierce. There's only one Hitler the Fuhrer.
You're exactly right, and we're lucky when we get strong leaders, but the corollary is, or one corollary is, that we need to have a type of infrastructure so that the philosophy does not die with the strong leader. And I would say that Pierce or whomever would agree with me on this. They would not want the movement to die with the person. There is a lot to be said. There is almost everything to be said about a strong leader. But if you look back at the strong leaders in history, going all the way back to Augustus Caesar, they rued the day of their own death because they didn't have the type of infrastructure that they needed to have a continuance of their movement. If you look back at Augustus Caesar and look at who he had to rely on, you know, Tiberius, Claudius, Caligula.
Well, not everybody can follow that, Dietrich, so. Well, let's just look at today and what we're doing here. And the fact is that you're saying that even though you thought very highly of what VOR came to be, you don't want to continue that. And you are going to start out again with a new name and with just yourself doing your program and nothing else. And the rest can go and do what they want, right?
Well, basically. I guess it was always like that, except I wasn't doing anything. You know, so the only difference really is that I'm going to do a program. Hosts were always free to go do whatever they were going to do. Mike with VOR just always happened to present, at least at the time, an easier way of getting out what it is they wanted to do. I look forward to, you know, if I can get some interested people to step up, I would like to re-syndicate, other programs on the web so that my whole thing would be for, Wylandia to be, a central clearinghouse of good content that people could use to, you can subscribe to it in iTunes and get all that stuff put on your iPod or smartphone. And you plug that into your car dashboard, and it can be played, and you know that there's going to be a certain level of competency in broadcast, decent quality, whatever. So we don't have a lot of that right now. We don't have a lot of great quality, but it's getting better. And as the technology gets better, what VOR tried to do, and what I think VOR did, in fact, is leapfrog the technology from 2008. I think we leapfrogged technology to about 2020 when Skype wouldn't cut out, when you could hear more than about 80% of what the call-in person said. I think VOR did that. And if we look at the positive, I think that's something to be proud of, not only for people like Mishko and myself that did the nuts and bolts and set up a VOR, to the people like Mike and Steve and other fine folks who took that and ran with it. It brought on new hosts and et cetera.
Well Mishko, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add to kind of what Dietrich's saying. I mean, just think about this, Steve. Think about the relationships that VOR built. I mean, from Greg Johnson to everybody, you know, to Tom Sunich and some of the stuff that's happening. I think a lot of what we did, it's kind of like soft dollars, you know what I mean? Soft dollar savings. You don't see them, but they're there. I think a lot of what we created, because a lot of the downloads were across the planet, I think that made a lot of people that might not have been white nationalists or whatever you want to call them aware that, you know, it's okay to be cool to talk about your race. And from all the relationships that were built, look what, you know, Johnson's doing. I mean, he's talking about doing his own stuff.
Oh, brother. Okay.
Right now, just because on VORnetwork.com, I posted a thing, just a really casual post at the top of VORnetwork.com. I didn't even know people still went to that website. I post, hey, should I do a podcast a couple times a month? I got my inbox flooded from people saying, oh, hey, you know, remember me? I got some old friends, like Rob, contacted me that I hadn't talked to since.
Rob from Australia?
No, not Halford. This is Rob from, this is, Kievsky. And other folks, you know, who are just good, solid people. But not only that, but I had people saying, hey, you know, I was in college back then. It's been 4 years since I've since graduated. But, you know, you helped give me a spine in my political science courses. And, man, that's what I was doing at the time. I was in poli-sci courses, and I needed a spine. And I looked at people like Alex Linder and the guys doing Goyfire. And so that's quite humbling. At the same time, above all, and I don't want to leave out Roger and others, but at the same time, I think that the important thing is to look at, you know, what do the bad guys do? You know, when the bad guys, when one of the bad guys' projects get downsized or gets, you know, morphed into something else, you know, what happens? Does everyone scatter to the four winds? Do they just go home? Do they just go home? No, they don't. They go to other things. They go and do bad things at other places. So I think the good thing for what would happen to the hosts of VOR, let's scatter the four winds. Let's go do good things in other places. Let's just not just give up and go home. go back to the farm. Let's go and do podcasts for our own thing. So, you know, much in the same way, you know, VNN and Alex Linder's organization seeded the movers and shakers that got VNN and Pod Blanc and other things started. That was it was sort of a supernova that exploded and seeded the universe with all these other organizations. You know, maybe in a small way, VOR can seed other things of the nationalist ecosystem with talent that says, look, you know, I know how to do a podcast. I know how to make it sound pretty good. I have this microphone, this audio system. I know how to work Skype. I know how to, you know, make it sound not crappy. Because that's really important. If you listen to something really crappy, you'll know what I'm talking about. It sounds exactly that, really crappy. So for the people that VOR helped train and bring up into the ranks, I have no apologies, and I don't think Michelle.
Well, they all disappeared. No, they didn't all disappear, but I mean, Steve disappeared, and then Mike finally disappeared. There's Steve. The hosts. So they do it. You know, hosts can always get on the mic and somebody, you know.
You say disappeared. This has been only a few weeks. You know, Steve actually, it's interesting you brought him up. Steve emailed me before showtime saying that he wanted to, that he was here and ready to go with whatever new effort I wanted to take part in. So.
Why did Steve leave when he did? I don't know.
School. School.
Oh, school. Okay.
Another thing that sucks is having to work full time and go to school. Yeah.
Well, yeah. See, a whole lot of the people that you worked with were young. Thinking of somebody doing this and still being in school, unless they were older students, is kind of mind boggling to me.
Carolyn, let me ask you something real quick. Something that from your from what I perceive of you. Let me lead you into a line of questioning here. What did you think of people talking to you when you were younger? And be honest here. What did you think of people telling you what you ought to do when you were younger? What did you think of older people telling you how to be and how to act and what your attitude should be and how you should think? Did you think positively of it, or did you think they sounded like old people telling you to get off their lawn?
I didn't have a lot of people telling me what to do. I didn't live in that kind of environment. Well, I was talking about that the other day on the radio with somebody. Okay. Was it?
Well, they don't have to be telling you explicitly that, but the overall, you know, the patina of mainstream media tells people today, you know, go along.
Oh, well, I know what that is. I know what that is. And my impression, Dietrich, is that you're pretty mild here. You're not going to try to do too much. And you didn't want VOR to try to do too much, because what you're saying is that you were, in spite of the fact of coming from VNN, and maybe because of that, that's why you guys.
Well, I only
was because you wanted to connect with more ordinary people and bring people into more of an awareness, racial awareness, and that's what VOR kind of continued, I guess, doing. Which I had a little bit of. I thought it was too much that way. So that's just the difference in.
Well, I only advocate for the violent overthrow of the United States. No big deal. But, you know, I believe that we should overthrow the United States and replace it with something less stupid.
Who's we going to do that?
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, you know, careers open to talent. There is no we yet. That's a great question. But to say that, you know, I wanted something kind of mild, maybe it was presented that way, but to anyone, I think we actually win by presenting ourselves very reasonably, but when you get right down to the point, we don't have to be pounding the desks and destroying our microphones to say, this guy's a little bit of a Southern freaking.
Well, I think you're making statements that don't really, it doesn't have to be one way or the other. I mean, here at the White Network, we have a pretty strong position, but we don't pound our microphones or or we pound our desks or whatever, or scream into our microphones. But it's just we are clear about what we want to say, and we're not interested in having people from all over the spectrum as examples, like VOR ended up having, and you sound like you would still go for that, or you think that's
well. What spectrum are you talking about? What spectrum are we talking about here?
We are talking about the wide identity spectrum, but it can be, you know, go from one, you know.
I don't really see a spectrum. I see 14 words, and you're either with us or against us.
Let's let Mishko talk. Mishko, how are you in this? You said Dietrich hadn't asked you. Are you interested in continuing in radio, or are you had said you were pretty busy? And
well, first off, Dietrich's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And as Dietrich knows, I love him like a brother, so a younger brother. Not as good looking as me, but if he asked, absolutely. I mean, we've been through a lot of hard knocks together, so to speak, in terms of building VOR, a lot of stuff. I mean, we're friends, and so I would do whatever it takes. I mean, we've just quite frankly, because you kind of pissed me off there earlier when you made it sound like Dietrich was giving up and VOR was intent to be a bunch of, oh, we're just trying to connect with people. Absolutely. Yes and no. We're trying, the whole intent of VOR was to give out the message, to talk about, topics that relate to white people, us.
Yeah. Well, are you talking about going on with Dietrich as a Dietrich and Mishko show again, or would you do something of your own?
If I was going to do something, it would definitely be with Dietrich. I mean, and go from there and see how that turns out and what we make of it. I mean, the thing about it is you need to understand something, Carolyn. With Dietrich and I mean, when we were doing the shows together, literally 10, 15 minutes before showtime, we'd get on Skype and just like find news stories of the week.
Oh, I believe it.
You know? Mm-hmm. And say, okay, what do you want to talk about? And directly correlate them within a 2-hour period, be able to discuss 3, 4, maybe 5 stories of the past week that happened and correlate them all the way back around into white interest. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not too hard.
That's really not too hard, in my opinion.
You don't think
No, because to take news story, I'm not putting down what you did. You did a really good job. Okay, well, but I mean, like for anybody to take news stories, everywhere. And
anybody can do it to relate to history going back several hundred years.
Well, I don't know that you.
You did that, you're kind of getting.
You should listen to some of my shows, Mishko. International Jewish show. Hadding and I, we only get on together right before the show. We've both read the chapter. That's a good program. You learn a lot from that program. I really enjoy doing it because it's easier because we've got a text to go by, which is similar to having news stories, and then we can just comment on it. And we do, he's the same person every week. That's another thing that's easier when you're on with one person on your show every week, and you know they're going to be there, and you're not getting guests, and you're not having to work with people who are new and so on, and you're not having to get a whole new deal with somebody you haven't talked.
Let's take a step back.
That's a little bit more difficult.
People listen to us.
Yeah,
sure they do. So they listen to us too.
Carolyn, let me ask.
I'd be willing to put our ratings up against yours.
I think when people talk about ratings, I think they should prove their ratings by showing the stats and so on. Because we hear a lot of things about people. You guys were talking. I was listening to one show since Saturday. I listened to parts of a few shows, trying to catch up a little bit more with some of the things you were, some of your shows. And I think you weren't on this one, Dietrich, but Mishko and a couple other guys, I think Mark Faust was there. Yeah, I wanted to listen to Mark Faust because I wanted to find out who he was. since I thought
that's creepy.
He was one of your guys, and they were you guys. You were talking about your ratings, and they went from 1,000 to so many thousands, Mishko, that I didn't think you were telling the truth. I thought you were just exaggerating. And you said
he got
those
numbers from me, and I run the server. It's true.
Well, it was like started out. We're getting 1,000 downloads, and then Mishko said no. He couldn't have said hundreds of thousands. I don't know what he said. 10,000.
I think they peaked out about 330,000 downloads per show.
330,000 downloads per show.
I'm only giving you what the server stats said. If you can't relate to it, it's not my problem.
No, I don't. I don't. I find that kind of incredible. When was this? What year was this that you got?
2000.
What show was it?
2008.
2008, when you first started.
Yes.
Yeah, when people were excited, I guess. Okay, over what period of time did it reach 300,000?
I mean, we're talking about 4.5 years ago now, so it's a little bit hard to say, you'll forgive me, what our exact server stats were, but we were getting hundreds of thousands. We were getting downloads in the hundreds of thousands. That's not unheard of. Goyfire at goyfire.com gets 250,000 downloads religiously.
In what period of time are you talking about? What period of time?
Like September 2008, like 4 years ago, almost exactly.
Yeah, but no, what I mean is over what period of time? How long does it take to get that many downloads? They don't just come, you know.
About 3 minutes for a 50 megabyte file.
Oh, no, I think what you're saying, Carolyn, is over what certain period of time. Like, if we posted a show on September 1st.
How long does it take?
Like 3 weeks, like a week. Well, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Something like that.
And you and there was 250,000 for Goyfire.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know about specifically about Goyfire because I never ran that domain. But they made that claim, and I have no problem with them making that claim. Even I would say that would be a conservative number for Goyfire since it's such a good program with Alex Linder, Aegis, and Craig Cobb, but and sometimes others. So I have no problem believing that show gets that kind of download.
Now, Carolyn, here's a funny example. My cousin, who lives in Croatia, called me and said, I just heard you on Voice of Reason Radio. Him and his friends in Croatia were listening to us.
And
of course, there's people listening all over the world. We have that too.
But think about the probability.
He didn't know it was him. He just recognized him from his voice. He didn't know it. He was supposed to be on there. This is a chance happening between two people on the planet.
Yeah.
And my point being that at the time, and even still, a lot of traction. And since then, a lot of things have changed. So, I mean, it's confusing for me to understand why it bothers you. But I think that, I mean, you're talking to the creators, the founders of.
No, it doesn't bother me. I find it rather unbelievable.
Well, you're getting kind of hostile. I mean,
well, because I find just hostility. Trying to fit myself in here so I can ask a question.
Are you pissed off?
What are your numbers like, Carolyn?
No, I'm not. No.
What are your numbers like? Let's get to the bottom here. What are your let's score your numbers.
Our numbers get up to 1,000. That's about, you know.
But that's about right for when you're doing your first broadcasts or whatever. I mean, I don't know how.
I can't believe 100,000.
Carolyn.
Hey, well, you have to
6 million downloads our first year. Our first year, we were getting 6 million downloads. Okay,
now,
and I want you to understand something, and please understand this: we want you to succeed. We want you to be phenomenal. We want everybody to be phenomenal because it's not about Dietrich and I. It's not about you. It's about the message and educating people. And that's the thing that's frustrating. I mean, we were never in this for anything other than trying to get the message out.
Well, Mishko, then why wouldn't you do your own program? Why do you say, oh, no, if I do a program, it'll be with Dietrich?
Because it's a hell of a lot harder. And it's exactly because we're not getting paid. It's exactly because we're not getting anything out of
this. Well, I've never gotten paid.
Yeah, but so what's your situation? Do you work? Are you retired? I mean, do you have a rich husband? I mean, what's your situation?
No, you'd say I'm retired. No.
Okay,
you're
I'm not.
Right.
I'm in my 30s, and if I don't work and if I don't make X amount of money a week, I have three little baby girls that starve. Okay? So
hey, by the way, Dietrich, are you we've only got a few more minutes for this hour. Did you get custody of your first two children?
We don't do custody in Florida. We do this touchy feely thing called time sharing, and I have time sharing with my two girls.
Yeah,
that I treasure every moment with it, and they do as well.
Wow, Carolyn, you had to go there. Wow.
Yeah, I did. Well, I wanted to know.
That was a little crappy.
Privately, that's good. That's good. I
get into people's kids. Stay classy, Carolyn.
I thought it was kind of unbelievable if you'd have full custody, you know, because they very seldom will give
that. We don't do full custody. We do time sharing. I have time sharing.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to get testy. I'm just speaking out here that I just would like to see the stats on those numbers that you're telling me. I really would. So send them to me when you can do that.
What does that ultimately prove? I mean,
it proves, that we're talking about transparency, amongst our white nationalists and leaders and shows and everything that we do. We need to have, we can't just make claims without. Yes, we are. Yes. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in 5 minutes with Dietrich and Mishko. So stay tuned.
Es ist einer dieser Tage, an dem wir bei Oma sind. Es duftet nach Kuchen und Kaffee. Wir lauschen ihren Worten, ihre Tränen sind nicht zu übersehen. Wenn sie von Oma erzählt, sie alle gingen damals einen schweren Gang, und ich schaue auf die Bilder an Omas Wand. Opa, ich vermisse dich, und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt, du warst ein guter Mann. Die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gabst dein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt. Erzählt von einer Zeit für uns unvorstellbar, geprägt von Tränen, Glück und Leid. Und immer wenn sie Opa sah, klingt ihre Stimme seicht und warm. Sie schließt ihre Augen und sie fällt schlafen in meinen Arm. Sie alle gingen damals einen schweren Gang, und ich schaue auf die Bilder an Omas Wand. Opa, ich vermisse dich, und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt, du warst ein guter Mann, die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gab sein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt. Opa, ich vermisse dich und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt, du warst ein guter Mann. Die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gab sein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager. You're listening to the Heretics Hour. This is our second hour, and I have with me Dietrich Mullis and Mishko Novosel of Voice of Reason Radio. And we're talking about the new plans for Voice of Reason, big changes. And I would just say, Dietrich, that it sounds like if you're changing the name and you're not going to have the same roster of hosts, that you're going to change the entire website. It's going to be an entirely new website coming up eventually, I guess, in the same. Well, how do you do that exactly?
Well, I designed the website, so I don't know how much it'll be changing. I mean, it's a lot easier. You know, I'm trying to do this on the cheap when it comes to not money but time. And time is money, as we all know. But I'm trying to do this on the cheap. And so the website will be about what it's like. I'm going to keep the archives up by popular demand. And, I mean, anyone is welcome to mirror those or to steal from them or to take clips from them and claim it as their own. As far as I'm concerned, you are free to do any of that. The notions are universal, so I think the content should be universal. Now, I can't speak for all of our hosts, but as we won't support any DMCA takedown notice or anything like that. VOR will stand behind any plagiarists or pirates who want to mirror that content. With that said, said that I designed the website to begin with, I don't think it'll be changing that much. It will just feature the archives and whatever is going on.
Well, the name will change, right?
No. Well, basically all that, you know, the domain, I'll keep the domain VR network. I'll keep that domain still pointing at the same site. It's just a matter of changing the logo. That's no, you know, that's like a half a day in Photoshop. It's no big deal. That's what I do every day. So, it's not a huge deal, actually.
No, I mean, for the people out here. You know, they'd be going to a different website, but you say it's not going to change that much, so I don't know.
They can go to the same website. It'll redirect to Whitelandia, it'll look the same. It'll feel the same, and it will feature
you,
me, I guess. Not me, but my, you know, whatever news articles I deem worthy for that week, just for what it's worth, you know, and I don't like to talk about Mike Connor and Dietrich Mullis, and I don't like to talk about stuff like that. I like to talk about what people have done or what's going on in the real world. You know,
I know. That's
Democrats
what you're
doing
in your show, right? Right. Yeah. Well, that, you know, it's, I've got some
Democrats adopting Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, a freaking holy site, as part of their main plank at the last minute, above the cat calls and the huge objection of actual Democrats in Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, I'm more interested in stuff like that. I'm more interested in Canada, for instance, outsourcing their foreign policy to Israel with regards to Iran. I think bringing people up to speed on that is more important. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm sorry about that. I'll probably be talking about
that. Well, I do know exactly what you're talking about. And a lot of people talk about those things. So, you know.
Do they?
Yes. In fact, sure they do.
A lot of people in that manner.
People don't see that?
Well, I don't know. They don't talk in your manner. They talk in their own manner. But I'm just saying there are programs on RBN, Oracle, American Freedom Network, all kinds of these networks that all have the same kind of format, and people talk about things on there.
Every other day, and especially lately, that I asked for anyone.
Well, I talked about the Israel-Jerusalem, the Democratic Convention thing myself. It had to have been on my last show on Saturday. I don't know when else it would have been.
I listened to your show on Saturday. You spent most of the time bad-mouthing me.
Yeah, I know. But I did bring that up somewhere along the line. However, I've got some questions from some listeners. So let's do that, and then we can, if we have time later, we can talk about news stories and so on. Because I've actually got some at the bottom of my notes that I thought we might talk about if we ran out of this stuff to talk about. But here is John C. Adamson, and he sent this. I've never heard from him before, but questions for Dietrich and Mishko. He sent this early today. And he says, and these are real technical, but I think maybe they're going to turn out to be good. What's the cost? He wants to know about the technical financial aspects of live format call-in capable broadcasts. What's the cost for first-rate equipment and software for a professional effort? That's his first question. You probably can't say.
I can. It's right at about $500 per month, John. And I just want to say hi because I recognize John C. Adams. And when I'm in my Gmail here, and when I type up his name, I find correspondence back and forth between he and I. So I believe I have corresponded with a John C. Adams, whether it's you or not, likelihood that it is. The quick answer is like between $350 to $500 to stay internet specific. Now, Alex Linder, bless his little heart, said, why don't people just turn on the microphone and record it and post it to the internet? Well, that's a lot harder than it sounds like, Mr. Linder, especially since you have tech people working for you that post it online. Second of all, your microphone sucks. Third of all, listen to almost any internet radio show, and when more than one person talks, it gets all cluttered up. Now go over to VORnetwork.com and listen to the old broadcast at VOR when there were multiple people online. It came through crystal clear. Say what you want, love or hate VOR, there was good audio quality, and there was a reason behind that, because we tried to make the audio quality solid. That is not easy. It requires multiple servers. It requires a separate web server and download server. That's one. And then a broadcast server. That's two. And then a backup server to handle any of the other duties of the other two servers should they get a denial of service attack. And let me tell you, VOR had denial of service attacks before we even went live for the first time. So there's that. But first rate equipment, all that, it's more of a monthly fee. It's between $350 and $500 because Skype and all that stuff won't get you there.
But he says first rate equipment. I guess, you know, the equipment is not rental. The equipment is, stuff you buy yourself.
Right?
What does he mean by equipment? Like mics and.
Yeah, microphones and stuff like that. Like right now I'm speaking through a Shure SM57. You know, it's the gold standard in microphones, and you know, I have a pair of headset. A headset doesn't matter as much as long as it's sort of comfortable. But you have to understand, you know, people who are using earbuds and their crappy microphones that exist in their keyboard. And we went through all this. We were doing media for a year or two before VOR was a twinkle in Mishko's eye. we were dealing with, you know, pounding on the keyboard when somebody's trying to search Google while they're doing a show. That's a normal.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I hate that.
Yeah, boom, 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 yeah. Right? So, and it just sounds like piss poor. So, and to us, to people who are already convinced, it's not that big of a deal. But understand it from a person's point of view that's not already convinced. And we just didn't feel like preaching to the choir. We said, let's talk to someone else other than the choir. Let's try to talk to
people. Well, I guess you'd been preaching to the choir at VNN for a while and you wanted to expand, right? That's kind of the impression
I
have.
Yeah, preaching to the choir is great. I mean, they give you money or they give Alex money and they say, attaboy, they pat you on the back, and the louder you shout, and the more frustrated you get, the more they pat you on the back and all. And that's great and all, especially to do what at least I did. I sort of honed my chops there a little bit, whatever chops I've got. You know, I honed my ability to speak on radio. And if you want to come up with, if you want to hear what that sounds like, listen to the difference between your Saturday show and mine. I'm saying, and you know, and all this other stuff. I've got all these bad habits that I listened to myself and reminded myself and smacked myself on the forehead about. But, you know, to have a better, quality is important to people who are uninitiated. If you're going and you've got all these bad habits, you sound even stupider than you are. So to deal
well, with, not necessarily. When I'm talking with someone else, I really never do that. But when I don't hear myself doing that. I don't think I do that. But when I'm on by myself, when I'm doing solo, which a lot of people will not do for that reason. That's when the ums come in because that's a way of pausing between one thing and another. But it is a habit, and it's not a good one. You're right. Let's go on to the next question by this guy.
Can we take a step back here also? Okay. There's other stuff on top of that. It's not just a server. It's a server software that you need. Like, for example, the server software that we were using at VOR. That costs money. And then it's not shrink wrapped. You don't like pull it out, mm-hmm. load it up on your server, load it up on whatever web server you're going to use, and it works perfectly. Right. Oh no. That's what put Dietrich in the hospital is trying to make that work. Let's be honest.
Well, that's probably what happened to Mike too here at the end when he couldn't make that software work with the server.
Carolyn, let me finish, yeah. Please. Okay. I can't speak to that, but to be able to build it to where you can actually have rotation of music, rotation of the other audios or the other stuff that you've done already, and then to build it in a certain way. Now think about this, to where it automatically at a certain time actually plays your intro, automatically calls you via Skype and starts a show. That's not shrink wrap. Everything that VOR did was custom.
Yeah.
Well, everything we have is custom, I can tell you that.
If I could just chime in here, a lot of people may be listening saying, well, we don't need all that junk. But the fact is, the uninitiated like it. The uninitiated do need it. They need it when there are hurdles to overcome when listening to any type of media, and you do not want quality to be one of them. You want the quality to be high so that the message comes through loud and clear. And you can compete with the bad guys. And I don't think we should take second seat to them. If people want to say, hey, we're superior, I think we should freaking act like it and be superior. So if that's why we want to have smooth commercial breaks or smooth, hourly breaks or half hourly breaks or whatever, I think that's part and parcel of what we should do if we're going to have a 24/7 type of network.
Okay. His second question is, and it might have already covered this. What's the cost for renting servers and bandwidth? I mean, that's just kind of in the first.
$50 a month. It's right about $350 a month.
For how many servers?
Three servers.
to give you a large bandwidth, to give you plenty of.
One server is your website. You don't want your website to go down when a show starts or whatever. You want to have a type of distributed thing. I looked at how the bad guys did it. The bad guys distribute their processes, and that's the way VOR did it. Not just because that's the way the bad guys did it, but just because the way network professionals do it. We had and it was also economically efficient. It was the most economically efficient way to do it. We had a web and download server that was roughly $20 a month and change. And then we had two servers that were around $100 a month. And then we had incidental software and other fees.
You had huge servers then.
I'm not sure how big the servers were, but...
Carolyn, it's not about servers. It's not – I mean literally when you rent a server, you are – at least nowadays, I mean everything is virtualized. So think about your computer stuffing it into a server. Everything's virtualized.
While that's true, we actually did own the metal.
Yeah, we have a dedicated server.
We owned the metal, the heavy metal for the server and the backup server, and we used the backup server a lot. And we used it to bounce calls off the way we could broadcast while if someone wanted to dial the 1-800 number. And what happens? What happens when you dial a radio station or a talk show on the radio? What happens when you dial the 1-800 number and they're busy with somebody else? You get put on hold, you get put in a cycle and stuff like that. Well, that software has to be written, and that can't be on the original server the way it turns out. You know, we used audio interfaces specially designed and coded for or the software that was coded to use these audio interfaces to use VOR in the way it was used and to route these calls so that the host could say, okay, now this caller, and now, okay, you're out of here, and now you're in, and you're on hold. What does this guy on hold want to say? What's his point? Whatever. Does he agree? Does he disagree? These things, this is what the big guys do. When you call in, you're screened and you're put into a queue, and then you're let on the show if you're lucky. And that was the goal, to do exactly that. And that requires two broadcast servers. And then to most efficiently, there should be a third server that's cheap, inexpensive, to hold the website and to have a really great data plan, like unlimited data, for instance, that you could just have as many people as you wanted downloading these huge MP3s or sometimes 50 megabytes and above.
If you're going to get 100,000 downloads, how does your server handle that?
The actual downloads were coming from an internet service that can only be described as the Walmart of ISPs, one-in-one internet. Mm-hmm. And they are just the god-awful hugest network pipeline. And by the way, they don't care what you put on there as long as it's not illegal. So,
well, not necessarily, because the ADL got one-in-one to discontinue service with some people that had been with them for many years.
Who's that? I didn't know that.
Well, I talked about that. That's Bill Fink's Krista Genia. And there were some others they also went after Zundelsite. And
Zundelsite may have been illegal in the country that he was hosting. Not saying that that's correct. Not saying that.
Krista Genia has a whole lot of pages. It's huge, much far, far huger than anything VOR ever has been. But and they had been with 1-on-1 for a long time, but they would not listen because ADL targeted them. And
last I checked, VOR had about 150 megabytes just in text. That is a huge amount of text. And code and URL links and whatnot, just basic text and code. So that's pretty big, actually. I wouldn't want to hazard a guess as to how many pages. The pages are generated on the fly because it's coded.
How many pages do you think that would be?
Geez, I wouldn't want to hazard a guess. It's PHP is generated on the fly from a MySQL database.
Well, Krista Genia said that he has 20,000 pages.
I wouldn't blanch from that. I would say Let's
see. I don't think we have 20,000 pages.
I would say like 6,000 or 7,000 pages.
Okay, let's go to the next question because we might be boring to listeners here. John Adamson also wants to know, if you lost the services of volunteers doing software programming and engineering work, that is your volunteers that are doing this stuff for you, what would it cost to hire a competent professional?
Oh, Jesus. Seriously?
Mark says, because he works in this type of industry, what would it
cost? $150 bucks an hour? What kind of retarded question is that?
For how many?
I know. That's obscene.
I mean, literally, that's obscene. I mean, God.
The offer was set up. Mishko said that would have cost about 80 or 90 grand. And I think that was I thought at the time I thought it was paltry at the time. And now, several years hence, I think it was probably about right.
Well, this man probably is just trying to make the point maybe of how important it is to have volunteers because we couldn't afford to pay for help, right?
Yes.
Hey, Carolyn, let me just tell you this because I'm getting really kind of annoyed here, but just to be honest, but I think that people need to understand volunteers don't happen. I mean, people might come out and say, yeah, I want to volunteer, and then they disappear.
Well, I agree with you. Absolutely right.
Oh, we're in agreement. That's great.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, I mean, Mike Connor was a volunteer that, I mean, bless his heart, the amount of work that he put into it for the last several years. You know, I would really caution somebody when they say that they want volunteers or they think they're going to get volunteers. That's a tough road to hoe because people, I mean, volunteers come and go, or they never come. That's the reality.
It costs a lot of time to bring them up to speed. Add that to the fact that about 60 or 70% of them bail in the first month, let alone the first week. I'd say about half of them bail in the first week. A remaining 10, 20% bail over the subsequent.
Okay, guys. You know, anybody who has lived long enough and done things and been in business – like we all have and have been in projects and so on. We all know that. And we know that a lot of people say, oh, I want to help, but they want to be told what to do all the time. They just want to be a part of it, you know, but they can't do anything on their own. So it's true. You have to figure on that and you just have to.
No, I'm talking about the people who passed the smell test. I'm talking about people who have programming knowledge in PHP and MySQL who come to you and say, you changed my life and brought me to nationalism or whatever and are solid and will show you stuff that they've already done and will give you great ideas for how you can streamline your process. These people will quit on you after 2 weeks because they have school or because they have other commitments and stuff like that. I know, Carolyn, don't insult my intelligence, love. I know how to weed out people who say they want to be a part of something and yet don't follow through. I'm talking about people who appear otherwise to be solid, know what the heck they're talking about, and yet aren't able to follow through for one reason or another. Even those people are 60, 70% of the time unable to commit after committing.
All right. John Adamson finishes up this way. He says, doesn't VOR follow up on contributions with a quick acknowledgement? If people send money once, they might send more if thanked. If somebody sends a significant sum, they might send more later if contacted in a respectful manner with a request for another donation and the reason it's needed. Salesmen have a saying, you have to ask for the order. I don't know if he has been a contributor of yours or what he's getting at here.
He probably has, and he's absolutely right, and that's where VOR and every other organization that takes donations could do better. Donors like to donate, and they also like to be acknowledged. They don't need their name written in the sky, but they like to be acknowledged, and that takes people, and it takes the type of person that's not going to be hired by a PHP and MySQL coder. It takes people to say, hey, it would be really useful if we had someone to email these people. He's absolutely right, is my point. But it takes the type of infrastructure that it takes a lot more infrastructure than one would think. And you're saying, well, all it takes is a 5 minute, you know, whatever to, but say you get 10 donations for $5 a day. That's a wonderful thing. But you're typing out these things for all these people. You're setting reminders to say, okay, next month, why don't we hit them up for money again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, you've got an hour and a half of coding to do, and you haven't even started feeding your kids yet.
Right? Well, the one thing you could get a volunteer to do would be to do that.
Get a volunteer to do that?
I don't know. Yeah. If you use volunteers, that's one something they could do.
Well, are you volunteering? Because
I will just say I'm not arguing here. I'm just trying to answer this guy's question.
Can I chime in for a second here?
Go
ahead. Here's a perfect example. Prior to me leaving, which is really kind of odd, is that everything that we did was via PO box. You know, people would send in checks or this or that. There was, I think, 1 or 2 months that we had enough checks show up to cover 1 month's worth of server bills. The rest of the time I was paying for them. So every time somebody sent in a check or this or that or some kind of cash, I mean, I got $5. You know, people actually, I mean, they sent what they could, right? And in return, I would always send back to them, you know, five of the VOR bumper stickers. Well, that cost about $1.25.
That's remember? True. You were doing that. You were also sending Happy Hanukkah cards at one point, weren't you?
That's what I was doing. So, it really becomes you start going down that road of, you know, I was trying to provide them with something, you know, here's bumper stickers, this or that. I mean, I spent about $250, I think, on 1,000 bumper stickers. And when I left, I had about 500 left and I shipped those to Mike. If Mike didn't send those out, I don't know, but, that's what we were doing at the time. So here's a question, Carolyn. At what point do you say, you know, do you send an automatic email? Because prior to that, we were not electronic in the sense that you could go on to VOR and hit the donate button and boom, wham, things happen. And it would send an automatic email. Thank you. You know, people sent, I mean, what was great about the P.O. box is that people would write out really nice letters and just thanking us for doing what we were doing and this and that. So,
okay. I was just going to say that, we don't have that many donations, but I send, I write to everybody who does donate, you know, individually. I don't spend a lot of time on it. I don't send them anything. I just thank them and tell them how much it's appreciated. And I have, repeat contributors, but we don't have a lot of contributors. We haven't really asked for much, but that's not the point. All right.
You'll find that you won't get that much. I mean, that's the tough part.
There are people who like you. They appreciate you and they think, gee, I need to support them. I'm going to send money. Maybe these people have a little extra money that they can send and they decide they're going to, I've got, two people who are sending monthly, which is really nice. But others have sent well more than once. But most people are not going to. I don't expect they are. But if we really needed it, and when we do need it, and we put out a push, we will probably get more because I do absolutely agree with what that man said that you have to ask for what you want. You have to ask for it.
And we did it all the time.
And that was always a constant struggle to get the host to do that and whatnot. And coming from VNN, that was sort of a sore spot. Not to get too much into it, but I didn't want donations to be a big, huge part of it. And even down to the present day, it's not hugely about money. Okay, so I took $60 out of the diaper fund to pull the web server back up for 3 months. Okay, whatever. It was bad timing. It was the same week my third daughter was born. Okay, bad timing. But other than that, it's not hugely about money per se. It's more about commitment, and it's more about talent, commitment, and people willing to support it financially with their time, with their efforts, and with, I don't know, I guess I would say even encouragement. But above all, it's about people with talent coming forward to generate content that's worth listening to.
Well, yeah, it's all important. And when people send financial contribution, I think that's a whole lot of encouragement. It feels good. It makes you feel really good. So I appreciate it. Now, we have a fellow named Conrad who has written questions for Dietrich. And these are a little more specific or a little different about content, what you were just talking about content. And you might not like these questions, but he says, what do you think of Attack the System?
Attack the System.
That's a program. Well, how about Mishko? That's a program on that was on Voice of Reason. For how long? The last 6-8 months or something? I don't know. It's
I got to be honest with you, Carolyn. I did not hear it, and I did not.
I know more about your site than about your. Once you left, you just quit listening to it, huh? Kind of.
I wouldn't say that's fair. That's not a fair statement. I think that. It was through a lot of frustration and stuff like that. And getting back to what you were talking about donations, I personally got sick of paying for it. I mean, I love the people that donated, but if I'm spending, I don't know, maybe about 20 hours a week working on it, nobody's helping out. I mean, when you talk about like finding all these people are in the woodwork just ready to come out to help out with a new broadcast station, that's a farce. That's not reality. People are afraid. They're not gonna. They don't want
to. I've read a couple paragraphs and I'm ready to have an opinion on Attack the System. If
okay, good. Okay.
So Keith Preston apparently did a show Attack the System, and I kind of like this. This is from an analytical point of view. His first couple posts, or his last couple posts here, were fourth generation warfare dating back to June 21, 2012. And he talks about Islamic revolution, French revolution, anarchist revolution. I dig it.
Okay, well, he's an anarchist. Yeah, he's got a pretty sophisticated looking website now.
I think we're all anarchists. Really break it.
Okay, well, all right, then he's got more things here. He says, after Attack the System, what do you think of non-white guests on the program? And some of them did appear on Attack the System. That was one of the shows that had non-white guests.
Well, sure. I mean, no problem at all. I mean, Mishko and I had a lot of long discussions about having Reverend Farrakhan on. In a non-hostile type of setting, or actually, I think Mishka wanted him on a hostile interview, and I preferred a non-hostile interview. It ended up not happening, but with that said, I mean, I've had non-hostile interviews with non-whites. I have no problem with that at all. And you know what? I find that non-whites actually are more
racially aware.
Yeah, well, of course they're racially aware, but they're more sympathetic to our point of view than our own people are in many cases. Because they think racially on a daily basis. And so they're saying stuff like, and if I had a nickel for every time I heard a non-white say, you know, hey, at least you're outright and respectful. I'd much rather deal with you than a liberal white douchebag to sit there and shake my hand and then move away from
me.
Well,
we wouldn't have you wouldn't have liberals on there, would you? I mean, there are.
But have non-whites? Why wouldn't I have liberals? I mean, it all depends on what type of, you know, why not? You can have hostile interviews. You can have non-hostile interviews. It depends on what type of show you're running, and what type of content you want to generate. I think people from our point of view, it's very much worth listening to what the other guys say, if only to generate responses to what they're going to hear. I mean, understand, I'm in my 30s. I'm looking at, you know, I'm not that far out of my college era, you know, so I'm sympathetic to the guys in college who are sitting there in their poli-sci classes, you know, wondering whether they're going to get kicked out of class for a paper they wrote or for something that they said, or they're going to get called in from front of some honor board. These are things that happen. These are things that I've had people write me and say, hey, I used something you said for this and I felt good about it. You know, that was great hearing. But we need to understand what the other side is saying, what they believe in, and if only.
Well, what about allying with non-whites? What about allying with non-whites? Do you see them as possible allies?
Sure. Now, would I be in a foxhole with them? No.
Well, I mean, how do you know?
In a foxhole with Tan, who apparently has a Jewish father and is admitted to such.
He doesn't have a Jewish father. Where do you come up with that stuff?
Apparently he's admitted to such.
It's not whatever. That's not a whatever question. Comment. That's
I
not.
I get to call your friend because apparently he's admitted to certain things. Okay, let's take Tan out of it for a minute.
Yes.
The thing is, I wouldn't, you know, there are... Who would you say, yes, go forth and attack the system? Yeah, on that level, I mean, it's not all black and white. But I think when you say, would you get in a foxhole with someone, like, you know, brother, who was it, Mark? Was it Brother Michael? Brother Michael's...
Nathaniel?
Nathaniel? Was it Brother Nathaniel? Okay, so Brother Nathaniel is a Jewish Orthodox Christian fellow. I don't know, straighten that out, if you will. And, you know, he was more anti-Semitic than Hitler on a bad day. And
he says so.
Well, whatever. You know? The point being, you know, he can rant and rave and whatever all, you know, as much as he wants. I don't care one way or the other. Would I share a foxhole with him? No. He needs to go dig his foxhole over there. And
seen as an ally. Now, how do you take an ally? And then you say, well, I'm not going to go in a foxhole with you if the time comes. You're on your own, buddy, or what?
I don't think Dietrich said that.
Point is that time
I don't know
is
what he's
really
saying. I'm trying
far.
To understand.
The point is that time is really damn far away. We can cross that bridge when we find it,
yeah.
Carolyn.
Okay.
We're
right.
So far away from foxholes right now, it's not even funny.
Well, you brought up the foxholes now, Dietrich. Come on.
That's exactly what I'm saying. We have... I brought up foxholes in the context that we are a long way away from that. Now, when we get to foxholes, am I going to be in one with some of these, so-called nationalists or Israeli Americans or whatever? Hell no. Hell no. But
okay.
Let them go off and do their own thing or whatever. Yeah, sure. Would I listen to a podcast by Reverend Farrakhan if he has something important to say? Sure. You know, better
I've listened to Farrakhan quite a few times, and he's hit on videos and so on. But that's not quite the same as having him on your network. It's a little bit different.
Oh, that would be awesome! That would be so awesome to take him to task. Oh God!
Well, you should get him. Why you couldn't? He wouldn't come on.
You don't have to have the. I think that's where you're going wrong, Carolyn.
Mishko said that you said you tried to get him on, and obviously he declined, right?
No, we were talking about getting him on, and the thing was, what, you know, are we going to have an essentially friendly interview with him where we talked about AIPAC and whatnot and the undue Israeli influence on United States politics, or are we just going to sit here and badmouth him because he's a black guy, right? So that was really the extent of it. You know, how would we carry?
Okay.
You know,
all right,
hey, go to CNN.
So you just discussed it. All right, Conrad has still got a couple more items here he wants to mention. What do you think of the homosexual issue? I guess as far as your radio network goes.
I don't think it's an issue. I mean, I don't want to be around them, and I think they're they shouldn't exist. I mean, I don't know.
But what most people do in their bedroom makes me want to gag. The point is, we in America have a really weird line of thought on homosexuality, and I think we in the Western world have a very weird line on homosexuality. You know, back in ancient Greece and ancient Rome, you know, guys could have sex with each other, but they weren't like gay per se. Like here it's like, you know, you suck one wiener and you're gay all of a sudden. Okay. Okay. Not like that. But no, the point is that, I don't really care one way or the other. But it does make me want to gag, just on a personal.
How can it make you want to gag, but you don't care? And Mishko, you said it's not an issue, but I don't want to be around them.
Well, a lot of what people makes me gag, but I, you know.
Well, I mean, if I can just chime in, Didrik, you got to keep in mind.
Gag, you know, I mean, whatever.
Carolyn, I grew up in the former communist country, Yugoslavia. And if someone came out of the closet, they didn't come back. You didn't see them anymore. That's my belief in terms of, or not my belief, but I mean, homosexuals are just, I mean, they're not normal. That's not normality. Would I want to talk to a homosexual on a radio broadcast? For what intent? I mean, a lot of these questions that you're bringing up are really for what's the intent? I mean, what's the purpose of the conversation?
Well this there, is a, like us gay, is a guy. Gay,
and then there's like the political homosexuals. The political homosexuals are absolutely the enemy. Any political homosexual who tries to normalize the behavior, that's distasteful.
Well, that's what goes on at, I just have to say, because it is what goes on at Countercurrents. Absolutely does. And maybe you're unaware of that.
I am unaware of that, and I really don't care, honestly. I honestly just don't give a damn who people have sex with. Homosexuality, my knee-jerk reaction is that it makes me want to gag. But if there's an intellectual that, you know, if I found out that Kevin McDonald, who happens to be married for a long time, I fear to even put his name in the same word as homosexual, because there's no way at all.
No, he's not.
There's no reason to believe he is homosexual. Just using him as an example, if I found out that he was homosexual, it would not invalidate anything that he ever said or wrote. And on that basis, I just don't give a damn. But if he was on a float in a parade in my hometown with assless chaps, then I'd probably throw rotten eggs at him. But
what if he's friends with those who are on the float and supports them, you know, as being allowed to do what they want and have freedom and so on, you know?
Well, they should have the freedom to do whatever the hell they want in their own bedrooms.
They're not talking about bedrooms. We're talking about going down the street on a float.
That's
right. Okay.
Come in.
And the idea of bedroom is just like it's just like saying a person of another race just has a different color skin. It's far deeper than skin. And what homosexuals do a whole lot is not just in their bedroom. I mean, they have a big impact outside of the bedroom.
Skin color is a thing that underlies a biological function. And homosexuality is a function of, I believe, how desperate a man is to get laid on a Friday night. I think that's what a lot of homosexuality comes down to. And then, you know, there are a lot of different reasons for people being homosexual. The fact is, I just don't give a damn.
We'll leave it at that, because I know lots of heterosexual men really don't like to talk about it. But this is what Conrad was asking, and now he has one more. What do you think of rejection of revisionism by white nationalists? He means Holocaust revisionism.
Well, apparently this is all the rage nowadays, with several nationalists coming forward and acquiescing to parts of the Holocaust myth. I guess this is the time, or it's the answer to this question, where I myself want to come out and just say that the Holocaust is as much of a hoax as it's ever been. If not more, every day the hoax grows bigger. Every day a lie continues, it grows bigger. And I'm a late comer to this whole thing. I, even as a nationalist, I said, well, gosh, you look at, as a historian or whatnot, a student of history, I looked at it and said, if you look at what Jews were doing in Germany in the 1920s and 30s and beforehand, it's not that hard to look at it and say, gosh, you know, the Germans came up with a really efficient and cold-blooded way to deal with the problem. So I didn't have a problem with the existence of the extermination of European Jewry by the Germans. Let's get to what the word Holocaust is, the systematic extermination of Jews in different parts of Europe by the German regime in the 1920s and 30s, or exclusion and extermination. But if you look into it, it just doesn't hold water. And anyone who doesn't care to look into it, but you want the too long didn't read version, they wouldn't need to enact laws in Europe and Canada and pretty much everywhere except for the United States if it was real. Okay. If it wasn't real, they wouldn't, you know, if it was real, they wouldn't need to enact laws to protect
people. Well, I think these people, you're making some good points, but I think what these white nationalists are saying, they're not admitting that it was real, but they're saying that as white nationalists, we should not get involved in it because it's not good for our cause and it's better to just ignore it.
I think that's a good point, but I think that's dependent on your audience. If you're looking at a bunch of philosophy or history buffs, it's a great thing to lead off with. Hey, let me tell you something you thought you knew, but you didn't, but it's wrong. That's a great way to pique the interests of certain people, myself being one of them. When I was not a part of the initiated, that would have been a great way to come at me and say, here's something you think you know, but ain't true. And that would sort of started a runner that would have just unraveled that could have been a great starting point to unravel a lot of things that I thought I knew that turned out to be false. That's a really good one, but it depends on your audience and it requires us to be smarter about things. So it's not as usual, it's not a one size fits all answer. And I wish I could give you your writer a more of a straightforward answer. But the best I can do is it depends.
Okay, what about you, Mishko? Because I know you like to talk about the Holocaust every so often.
It's pretty straightforward to me. And this is about 2 months ago. My mom, who's 83, she grew up in Yugoslavia, and we had family that fought on both sides of the war. Both for Germany and both for the partisans or the communists.
You had an uncle die at Auschwitz, didn't you?
What's that?
You had an uncle die at Auschwitz, didn't you?
No, he survived Auschwitz and 7 or 8 other camps. It was pretty incredible. So, he was paid about $80 million for it. But no, we can't. it was really interesting. My mom and I were having a conversation about the Hall hoax and all that kind of stuff a couple months ago, and she mentioned something that was really, really interesting to me, is that back in 1950, because my mom is a very – I don't want to call her affluent, but she's got a lot of energy and likes to see the world. She speaks like 7 languages. She's incredible. Went to Germany – and in Berlin, and this is how the conversation went. I go, Mom, do you really believe all that crap about, you know, the Hall hoax? And we've had these conversations. She's like, nah, it didn't happen. And she flat out told me, she goes, in 1950, when I went to Germany, Berlin, Germany, there were so many Jews around that it would be impossible to even fathom that the Hall hoax happened because the Jews were everywhere. Mm-hmm. They were sitting in a dominated country, in a country that was decimated from Dresden onward. And she knew the score at that time. She knows the lie. She told me about the lie. And I don't want to say I believe the lie. I know the lie is as for what it is. It's a lie.
Right. So I guess in short, Mark, that what we're all trying to say here is that, you know, they wouldn't be throwing people in jail if the thing was real.
Yeah, but the question really is it in the best interest of white nationalism to not engage in that.
Well, that's not a monolithic thing. You know, white nationalism has no monolith. You know, we don't have a platform. White nationalism is not the Democrats or the Republicans who, you know, break their necks falling over themselves to support a foreign nation to our own detriment. We don't have a platform. We don't have the type of leadership.
But the people who are saying that are saying white nationalism. They're using the term white nationalism.
Well, that's their fault. So, I mean, I can't absorb.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying. You know, do you agree with that or not? I'm only saying what's being said out there.
But I'll stand by what I said previously, that it just depends on the audience. If it's useful for the audience, it's a great way to put it. I don't think there is no truth out there that anyone should be ashamed of. That's sort of a great, strong starting point. And a lot of times I will talk about, you know, like in my podcast or whatever, or my broadcast, I'll talk about coming from a position of strength. Well, the truth is the best position of strength you can deal with. And if you're there, you should never let anyone take you away from it. Now, if you have a certain audience that doesn't give a damn about it, it's not the best thing to lead off with. Smart people know how to convince, to win and make friends with other people and to get them to listen to you and get them think your way.
But how to
win friends and influence people, right? You don't talk about something they're not interested in. If they're history buffs, if they're philosophy type people.
Well, sure. But these people are talking about never. They're not talking about one audience or another audience. They're saying they would never.
Never, that sort of thing. Usually not true.
It depends on the country that they live in. Here in America, we can say it. Would I ever in this day and age?
Well, these are Americans.
Well, then they're being weak. I think that's weak.
Good, Mishko. I'm glad you take a stand. Weak. Yeah. Okay. Good.
Ask about it. Even if it's not the best of audiences, if they ask about it, I think these people need to be laughed at. They need to be ridiculed. You know, if someone says, you know, they need to be ridiculed like the guy on History Channel that's obsessed with talking about ancient aliens, for crying out loud. except these ancient aliens hit us up for billions of dollars per year. They need to be laughed at, ridiculed, and destroyed. Anyone who is putting over a lie to the detriment of our people need to be utterly shunned, and they need to be treated that way. They need to be treated as an enemy. And but you know, if you can get more mileage talking to someone without bringing up the whole hoax at the get-go,
yeah.
Whatever way you think is best.
Well, sure.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave.
Dietrich, I've got one question here. I don't know that you guys are interested in saying anything about it, and you don't have to. Maybe it's not a very good point to bring up. But you both had relationships with VNN and Alex Linder. And do you have anything to say about your relationship with Alex Linder today? Anything. Do you have anything to say about it?
Do you, Mark? From 4 years ago, I found out.
No. You know, my gut. I mean, my gut and my truth and who I am as a person. I like Alex. I still like Alex. I just wish that there was a way to fix stuff
and.
Yeah, he's a hard-headed son of a gun, and I think he's a brilliant guy, a brilliant writer. He could do a lot more, and it's a shame. You know, I mean, it's a shame. So, I mean, I really do, from the bottom of my heart, wish Alex the best. I think he's not being fair to some of the stuff that he's done with regards to his forum and talking about stuff with Dietrich and myself and this and that, but it's, you know, only time will tell. You know, maybe he gets on Skype and unblocks us and we can talk. I mean, I think he's a brilliant guy.
Okay.
Alex is wrong, but he's not evil. There's a very important thing. And he's not wrong about the stuff. I'm not talking about the stuff like he writes about or whatever. It's just that Alex Linder is a writer and a philosopher and a damn good one. And he's not a politician. He's not one for building bridges. He's not one for writing an all-inclusive platform that will he's about pissing people off, getting them in the streets, throwing firebombs at the bad guys. Alex Linder is a bomb-throwing radical. He always will be. That's the cut of his jib. And
figuratively.
Yeah, right.
Well,
I don't think he really is. Well, then would you, what about either of you?
About that, I'm just saying, you know, he's not a bad guy. He's just wrong about other people, namely us. You know, when we said, you know, he thought we were like trying to soften our image or whatever. We're just trying to not preach to the choir. But his function, I believe, is more of a red meat type of guy. You'll see that in speeches by, for instance, the vice presidential nominee for the Republican Party. When they pull him out, he's there to throw red meat at the already converted. And with VOR, I said, okay, I think that's a little bit of a circle jerk, and we want to go out and win new hearts and minds. To whatever extent, we did some of that.
Okay, but, well, you know, we've only got a couple of minutes, so I've got one last question for both of you. Do you consider yourself I know you respect him. I think you made that clear. Are you a hardcore? Do you consider yourself hardcore racialist or softcore racialist? I don't suppose you'd want to consider yourself soft in any way. So where do you stand on that?
I have no idea what that means. I stand by the 14 words. I can't want deviate from that. I also stand by the words that Rob Kieski put down.
Which are?
Oh, gosh. Now you're going to make me recite them. Don't have them here in my notes, but I read it. I said I stand by it, and I'm looking for the file right now. But it's basically the 14 words. It's a non-negotiable. Whether that makes
sense. Well, as a father of three, you should take that pretty seriously, I guess.
Well, the 14 words is a non-negotiable. It's a non-starter. Any type of derivation for that is an absolute non-starter. And I think that's a great starting point, and I don't think anyone has any business coming against us with that said. Anyone who comes against us with that said marks themselves out immediately as an enemy. But you know what? I don't think a lot of people can argue with it. It's so sound.
Yeah. You were on solid ground there. Well, Mishka, I'm going to let you have the last word here. And before that, we've only got 30 seconds. I want to thank both of you very much for coming on. It says a lot for you, and I do appreciate it. So you have anything last word you want to say, Mishko?
Yeah, are you done with this axe that you need to keep grinding?
Which axe?
This axe you keep grinding. You keep grinding it against VOR.
Oh, my axe against VOR.
Yeah. Have we answered your questions?
Are we done with it?
Yeah, you've answered a lot of questions. Yes, you have done. You have answered a lot of questions for me, and I appreciate it. So thank you, and ladies and gentlemen, come back next week for another Heretics Hour.
Mark, you're fucking prince.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.